This is a special showcase episode of the Round Table Podcast. 20 minutes with PG Holyfield.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Humphrey.
And I'm Dave Robison.
And you're listening to the Round Table Podcast and this week's 20 Minutes With.
20 Minutes With is an opportunity for Brian and I to sit down with the guests who are the guest hosts who are so generous in sharing their time with us and exploring their craft, getting into their heads about how they perceive their processes, their creative endeavors, and try and get an understanding of how they do the amazing stuff they do. And this week, Brian, we have an icon to share the Skype line with us.
Yes, we do.
We do. Let me lay this down. No, it's true. PG, hush. This is your introduction. You can't talk yet. best known, no doubt, for the crafting and creation of the novel Murder at Avedon Hill, which is an award winner, the John Polidori Award for Best Vampire Novel, Silver Medal Award winner for Best Fantasy from Forward Book of the Year Awards, 2009 Parsec finalist, an exceptional text. But it doesn't stop there, because not only was there a podcast of this awesome text, but also he went on to create Tales of the Children, a podcast of stories set in the Murder at Avedon Hill world. There we go. And yet it continues on, for he's the master architect of Specfic Media, which, if you have not been to this site, dear friends, make the scene. It is astonishing how one man can create this sprawling mecca of speculative fiction, trailers, interviews, author readings, reviews, podcast forums, whatever you want in speculative fiction, you will find it here. And then on top of that, he goes and hosts and produces the Beyond the Wall podcast, which is a fan cast centered on Game of Thrones.
All
over that. So if you haven't guessed who it is by now, it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. And please welcome PG Holyfield to the Roundtable Podcast. PG, thanks for being on the show, man.
Well, thank you. And good night, everybody.
And good night. PG, if you don't mind, I don't know if you've been catching the show at all, but our 20 minutes have been bleeding into 30 minutes just because...
Yes, I have listened. And well, when you talk to Dan Sawyer, it has to happen. So,
inevitable. Inevitable. And, you know, we're not going to hold you down to any things, but let's roll into this, because Brian and I both have some questions we want to throw in your direction.
Okay.
I want to start off with... In reading and also listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, one of the relationships that struck me, one of the parallels that struck me, was between Artemis and Aaron, and the correlation, at least in my mind, with the name of the rose and the characters, the master and the mentor character there. And that's a motif that has been played many times. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, and I'm curious how you approach this. We all, as consumers of this wonderful stuff, see stuff that astonishes us, that captures our attention. How do you, when you see something by Catherine Kurtz or George R. R. Martin or any of your other favorites, when you see something that they love, how do you incorporate that? How do you turn that into a learning experience that you can then use to inform your own creations? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The main thing with Aramis and Aaron, the two main characters in Murder at Avedon Hill, is, like you said, it's a teacher-student relationship, for lack of a better term, an Obi-Wan Kenobi, Luke Skywalker relationship. But, you know, if you're looking at like Joseph Campbell's, mythology and the archetypes, you know, you have that mentor-student relationship, and usually it ends with the death of the mentor, which somehow pushes the main character further.
Sure.
So in that respect, one of the things that I do or wanted to do is take that relationship, but make it more of an equal relationship, even though it is a mentor-student. You definitely get throughout this particular novel that, you know, the mentor character, the teacher character, is the one that is the central character. So instead of making, you know, Luke the hero, you're making Obi-Wan the hero. And I'm talking about in the original trilogy, not in the, we don't count the more recent movies.
Sure.
So usually when I find something that I like that someone else has written, then I definitely use it, but try to change it somewhat, or, you know, put my own spin on it to make it a little different, make it new for people, because that, you know, you don't of course want just the normal vampire novel or the normal murder mystery. You want to have you know, those twists in there that make it new for people that are picking it up for the first time.
Sure. Is there a process that you go through? I mean, you know, for a vampire novel, for example, when you sit down and say, damn, I want to write a vampire novel, and you don't want it to be derivative of all the other work that's out there, what process do you go through that gets it to a point where you feel that it is fresh and new?
Right. Well, one of the things, and the funny thing about winning that award, which was a you know, sort of a popularity contest, and I just got lucky that, like, the readers of the Suki Stackhouse novels or the Twilight novels didn't know about the website and voted for it, but you know, thankful for the people that did, is that Murder at Avedon Hill isn't a vampire novel, really. There are vampires in it.
Right.
The main thing I was trying to do with this novel, not only tell a murder mystery that's set in a fantasy world, but really to introduce the world to the readers and the listeners. So I introduce not only vampires, but also my version of werewolves and the pantheon of this world and how they interact with the people in the world. Is sort of the central theme of this setting. So I tried to, you know, introduce all of those things within the framework of really just a closed murder mystery in a town. So it was a lot of fun to do, and
it opened the door for Tales of the Children, where you could expand and riff on that forever.
Right, because Tales of the Children was about the just sort of myths that, you know, stories, tales that people, and I wrote a couple, but it was mostly from other authors that would take the whole aspect of these different gods that could choose to live mortal lives and interact with people in the world and sort of run with that and tell whatever story they would want to tell. So back to the original question, just being able to sort of have these things, you know, whether it's the vampire aspect of the story, you know, in one way, I'm trying to use it, you know, put as many red herrings out there as to what's going on in this town and introduce these different types of characters and monsters in this world. But, you know, hopefully do it in a little bit of a different way, you know, because it's not the focus of the novel saying, okay, here's how I deal with vampires and the mythology.
It's not a travelogue.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
and to play into the, that introduction to that world, and God, what a world.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. There's obviously a huge amount of work that goes into crafting a world like Cairn, or, you know, the one that we experience in Murder at Avedon Hill. And what really struck me right off the bat was the detail and attention that you paid to the religion, and all of the background with that and what you had to sort of carve out. And so I guess my question with this is, what was your process? What process did you go through in developing, firstly, the world of Cairn, and was your first priority fleshing out the religious background since it was so in detail, or did you focus first more on the physical world?
The land of Cairn, which is the setting, has sort of been my Dungeons and Dragons setting since I was pretty much a teenager. And
nerd, yes, nerd. Awesome.
But thankfully so.
yeah, so, no kidding. You know, I've been building on this, you know, world for, you know, 20 some years, and the religion that I, you know, sort of pulled into this world was sort of a mishmash of I was a religious studies major in college, you know, not like a seminary studies, but it's more of a history, anthropology type degree where I went to school.
Comparative religion.
Yeah, it's more of a comparative religion. And so I study a lot of Eastern religion, about a lot of Hinduism and Buddhism, and there's a lot more, especially in Hinduism, the idea of the gods directly interacting with humanity, and not just being parts of stories and myths. It's, you know, their mythology is, yes, these gods met, you know, they were these people and they were the, you know, that sort of thing. So I, in addition to that, I was, you know, always a Greek mythology, you know, buff. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of the idea of, you know, the gods looking down and, you know, early on in the settings history, would have, you know, gods just saying, or the children, these immortal beings saying, oh, I want to, you know, help this ruler take over this land. So they'll just sort of appear and do things. And in so doing, in the early history, they almost destroy this world. So the creator God puts these restraints on these beings so that they can only come into the world by being born as mortal, whether it's human or elf or whatever it might be. And they don't know their own history or their own godhood unless they do something during their lives that allows them to understand their true nature. So that was always part of the setting. So when I started working on this novel, it was actually tied with there was a computer game called Neverwinter Nights. Put out by BioWare, which was one of the first computer games where you could actually build stories that other people could play through. So the murder mystery started as a module that I was working on with some other people that would have been a tournament module where multiple groups could go through the same story and get points based on what they were doing, you know, things they figured out, that sort of thing. So I was doing it as a murder mystery, and there were multiple options as who the killer might be. And when that sort of fell through because real life and people didn't have time to do, you know, certain parts of it,
sure.
I decided to apply that story into my setting and make a, you know, I'd written several short stories in the setting and a couple failed novels that, you know, will never see the light of day. But, you know, this sort of fit because I had spreadsheets upon spreadsheets of dialogue for all these characters that the players in this game could meet.
Spreadsheets?
Yeah, because, you know, if you played any sort of adventure game where you have a lot of, or RPG where you have conversations and conversation trees with these characters, and, you know, depending on who you've met before and what pieces of evidence you have, in this case, the options for what you can talk to these people about would change. So
I still want to play in your world. Holy crap.
So you've got, you know, so I built this whole thing in the spreadsheet of all these, you know, 50 some characters. And depending on what, you know, I had to account for every conversation that you could have. So, wow. When the game fell through and I had just all of these things, I had most of the dialogue, you know, in very, you know,
rudimentary
fashion already down as far as the main storyline of the actual murder mystery. And then once I put these two characters in here and, you know, figured out how to include the mythology and the religion and, you know, throw in some, you know, a good bit of monsters in there as well, it pretty much worked itself out.
Sure. So did the were the character relationships already established before you put pen to paper, as it were?
For this, I mean, it was completely plotted out from beginning to end.
Total outline.
Yeah. So I'm, for longer works, I definitely am an outliner.
Sure.
I, you know, want to know how the character's getting from A to Z. And then once I get into the actual writing process, that's when things can, you know, can, instead of going A, B, C, may go A, B, D, F, okay. E, you know, so definitely characters can write their own stories and change things. But as far as the overall story, especially a murder mystery, you know, a lot of times you're going to start from the end and work your way back. So you're not, you know, halfway through a novel and trying to figure out, well, who's the killer, you know?
Okay.
So
right. Well, that's kind of ironic, really, because I participate on a online writing community called Mythic Scribes at mythicscribes.com. Ding. And a lot of attention is paid to world building, and it seems like world building kind of gets in the way of actually writing the darn story. In your case, it's the exact opposite. You spent 20 years building the world, and so I'll write a story for it, and went that way.
Mm-hmm. Right, but I mean, because it was so set as far as what was going on in the world, as far as the setting, you know, yeah, as you're saying, it didn't get in the way at all. Once I had the plot, then I could figure out, well, what can I pull into the story from my world that makes sense, and not try to force things, or not try to, you know, the only things that was really cut down on in the editing process would have been, there were some times where I did get a little, you know, off the rails talking about some of the mythology and the tales that the main character might be telling to his student, the prince character. Sure. and that sort of thing. So it's sort of scaled back on that a little bit, so it's not, you know, it didn't take away from the action of the story, but yeah, that's the setting, you know, at least from what everybody said, added to the story rather than got in the way of the story.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. We'll be back with more of 20 Minutes with P.G. Holyfield after this brief promotional break.
My name is Justin McCumber. I'm the creator and one of the co-hosts for the Dead Robots Society podcast. Every week we discuss a variety of topics that are fundamental to the craft of writing, from the differences between tone and theme, to world building, to how to create compelling antagonists. Along with the roundtable discussions, we've also had the pleasure of interviewing published authors, television writers, podcast luminaries, publishing house founders, and magazine editors. We're dedicated to our listeners, and we work hard to pack our episodes with as much quality education and entertainment as possible. We never stop encouraging ourselves and our listeners to always be writing and to always be improving. The promised land of publication is our goal, and we know that together we can achieve it. If we can also have a good laugh along the way, all the better. You can find us online at www.deadrobotssociety.com. At our website, you'll find show notes, links to our personal sites, our email address, and direct download links to our episodes. You'll also find a link to our forums, where we've created a private critique group so that you can safely post your work and get comments and suggestions from us as well as our listeners. All we ask is that you participate by critiquing in return. So come to our site, subscribe to our show, and join us. You can also find us at iTunes. Just search for Dead Robots and we'll be there. After that, get writing. We are.
And now let's continue the conversation with P.G. Holyfield.
Having that so ingrained, you know, building it for as long as you did that cause any stifling of what you could do then within that world without changing aspects of the world? Does that make any sense?
I think so. I mean, it's not that I'm trying to figure out how to answer, it's that I'm not trying to spoil anything for anybody that hasn't read it.
No spoiler alerts.
Right, yeah. Right. Basically, part of the religion and the pantheon and the children comes into play in the novel with one of the characters. And in that case, it was one of those things where I had, okay, well, this, you know, this person could be the killer, and wow, this is a neat way that this thing I've already established, at least in my own mind, in my own world, this type of thing could happen where a character is influenced by these immortal beings in certain ways. So it just sort of fit in, you know, what I was trying to do, and gave maybe a little bit of a different take on, you know, why someone would commit the killings that were going on in this story. So it actually lent itself to the story, even though I had, you know, I had the killer set and I had, you know, how, but being able to add a layer on top of that, which also played into the setting itself, you know, was a bonus.
Sure.
Right.
From the context of writing the story itself, writing the book, what do you wish someone had sat down and warned you or told you about before you started writing that you discovered after it was all done, said and done?
Right. I mean, one of the things that I've always had trouble with and that I continue to have trouble with is, and I know that people have talked about this probably on your show before, is really just writing and not editing. So I, you know, I would write a chapter, and then, you know, the next day or whenever I get back to it, go back, I'd spend half a day editing that first chapter instead of just moving on to the second chapter.
Yeah.
Right. Then I would move on to the third chapter and rewrite the first chapter and the second chapter and then start the third chapter. You know, so for a long time, I just didn't understand, you know, the process of writing to make it an efficient process. So that's the main thing I tell people. And one of the things that I did for a while was there was a podcast I did, which was called the Nano Monkeys, which was a podcast for NaNoWriMo to support people doing NaNoWriMo. And that's
very cool.
One of the, we did little, just 5-minute segments, daily podcast for the 30 days, and different writers would come in and do a little, you know, pep talk or a little, you know, try this or, you know, don't do this type thing. And mine was always, you know, when you're writing and you're trying to write 50,000 words, you know, do not edit, do not look back other than read the last paragraph that you wrote to, you know, reintroduce or re-familiarize yourself where you are and just keep going.
Is that the habit that you adopted to discipline yourself?
That's definitely the habit that I've tried to adopt. I'm still horrible at, wanting to go back and even if it's to the point of just, you know, trying to figure out, oh, well, you know, maybe this plot point shouldn't appear at this point, you know, maybe I need to introduce that later or something changes 3 chapters down the line that affects that first chapter. Don't go back and mess with it. Just make a note and say, okay, well, this affects, you know, meeting character A back in chapter 1. I need to, you know, fix that later, but just keep going and don't worry about the edits and the changes until you're done with a first draft.
Now, is that really hard to do with a mystery novel?
Yeah, that's a good point.
With a murder mystery? Because it almost seems like, you know, as you're going through, if there's something that you go, oh, crap, if I do this, that would be perfect, and then this plays into that, and da-da-da-da, and keeping yourself from going back and doing that and just jotting down notes just seems...
I think it depends. Yeah, it depends on the type of writer you are. If you are a discovery writer and you know maybe have a general idea of what you want the plot to be for your murder mystery, then I just don't know how someone can be a discovery writer writing a murder mystery because
that's a good point.
You know, unless you really want to make mistakes and have things that, you know, shouldn't be there, you know, you give away a piece of information or something that makes the killer obvious and you know, because of something you wrote 3 chapters before, or you forgot you mentioned so-and-so, so you've got a lot of conflicting things in there because, you know, murder mystery is all, you know, okay, well, this person says this and this person says something else, and if you've, you know, contradict yourself, unless you're meaning to contradict yourself for some reason, then
right.
You know, you got a big mess by the time you're done. So if you
need all the clues and the red herrings plot, laid out ahead of time.
So if you know, I use, I use Scrivener now, but I can't remember. I can, YWriter is a application for the PC that I use a lot, which allows you, you know, it's basically a database for helping you keep track of, in the case of a murder mystery, evidence or, you know, what this person said that's important or, you know, the different things. And you see where you can pull that up separate from any of the text. So you could say, okay, well, where are all of my pieces of evidence? So this happened in this chapter, this happened in this chapter, without having to read through all the text and try to keep track of where things are placed. And you know, maybe you want to
have something appear later and not so early or what have you. So it makes it a little bit easier in that respect.
Well, that would be useful for, I mean, not just mystery writers, but for anybody that's writing a complex plot. I mean, having those resources at your hand, at your beck and call,
mm-hmm. would be huge. Yeah, I mean, I've always said that, you know, because people, I didn't really mean to write a murder mystery. I would, you know, my plan was always to do, you know, the big epic fantasy novel, which, you know, eventually I'll get to, you know, get back to. But every novel is pretty much a mystery. There's some secret or there's some, you know, revelation that you learn later on, or that, you know, mm-hmm. the hero is trying to discover, you know, whether it's so, you know, that applies as far as knowing what's going on when people learn information and that sort of thing is important in all fiction.
Sure. Sure, sure. So you're an advocate of the Joseph Campbell hero's arc.
I am. And it definitely works for, you know, they're archetypes for a reason, and it's you know, it's the type of story that people understand, and you know, they understand the beats of it, and if you tell it either well or in a slightly different way, then you're not just rehashing old stories. You're, you know, building something new.
Sure. Sure.
Did you use him as well, with your mythology background? Did you feed from some of his?
I'm sure, subconsciously, because I definitely, you know, like the power of myth is something that I've listened to like four or five times on audiobook. So I know that I've pulled things from there as far as how, you know, the whole relationship between man and the spiritual mm-hmm. side of things is plays out. So, definitely did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's actually a book, and I'll try and find it and throw it in the liner notes. I can't for the life of me remember what it was, but a guy had actually written it was focused on screenwriting more so than novel writing, but the same basic principles apply, where he applied the Campbellian hero cycle to the conventional mm-hmm. 120-page screenplay, mm-hmm. and it was just an incredible read to see the template that Campbell laid out, and then see it laid very effectively and very practically in the context of actually writing a story, and making sure that all the beats are there that you need to tell a good story.
Right,
awesome stuff. Yeah. So, PG, for our writers out there that are tuning into the podcast and are looking for guidance or insights to further hone their craft, what words of wisdom would you offer them from your own experiences as far as how to be a better writer?
I mean, I think depending on the type of novel you are writing, getting back to, you know, writing a murder mystery, for example, you need to concentrate on plot first and then have all those beats down so that you can concentrate on your characters. Whereas, you know, in a normal work of fiction, you may concentrate on characters and then, you know, the plot sort of comes out as you go. So it's a matter of trying to figure out what's most important to you, to your story, depending on what type of story it is. And then, you know, don't, you know, in any of these respects, you gotta take care of both, whether it's the plot or the characters. You have to, you know, cover both of them. So don't concentrate too much on one or the other.
That's good advice. That's sound advice.
Absolutely.
There's alchemy there. There's the blending of minerals into gold. Very cool. I'm looking at the clock and I'm seeing once again we've spilled over on our time. Yay! You know, really, it's 20 minutes in name only. Let's just put that out there right now so we don't have to beat ourselves up about this anymore.
And you know, I don't think that anybody minds.
I don't No, you know? I don't think so.
I mean, we get such fabulous things from these hosts, especially, you know, like PG and all of the others that we've had, that it's, you don't want to stop listening. At least right. I don't.
That's right.
Plus when Gail Carter's talking, you don't want her to stop talking anyway. So.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, no doubt.
Exactly. or Nathan Lowell. God, just listen to that man talk forever. Yeah, here we go. Reminisce. This we'll save this for the reminiscence show, for the best of show. Right.
I remember when.
PG, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experiences and your unique perspective on the process. We really appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, sir. No problem.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Brian, anything to add before we jeté gracefully off to Coolsville?
Other than that, I'm knee deep in Murder at Avedon Hill right now. I haven't quite finished it, but I'm enjoying every second of it. And so it's a real delight to be able to talk to you. So
thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on.
Outstanding. Friends, thank you so much for joining us. As always, we greatly appreciate your attendance and patronage. If you have any comments or questions that you want to pose to Master Holyfield, feel free to go ahead and drop a comment up on the post. If you're enjoying the podcast, by all means, head on out to iTunes. There's a link right underneath the player there that'll get you out to iTunes. Drop us a review, because that is huge for helping other people discover the podcast. And I assume if you're going to take that effort, you believe it is worthy. So help us out with that. We'd love to hear your observations and comments out there as well. I'm going to call a wrap on this, Bri.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. So stay tuned. In a couple of days, on Tuesday, we'll have PG's Workshop episode where we dig for some literary gold with a guest writer. Until then, take care of yourselves. Ideas are cheap. Get down and write them down. Brian?
Go write.
Go write. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com. Or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is @writerspodcast. Or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.